When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello and welcome to this by-election special edition of the Red Box Politics Podcast from The Times. I'm Matt Jolly. This podcast is dedicated to the godson of listener Miranda Smart, who recommended Redbox to her, and she's now dropped other podcasts in favour of what she calls this beauty. So today, Friday, February the 24th, there's a lot of talk of history and humiliation. Jeremy Corbyn humiliated, Paul Nuttall too. The Tories making history, becoming the first governing party to take a seat at a by-election since 1982. Theresa May achieving in Copeland something which Major, Blair, Brown and Cameron never did. The Conservatives will now say that there were no no-go areas for the party after overturning a 2,500 Labour majority to win by more than 2,000 themselves. It's truly a humiliation for Labour in Copeland. But Jeremy Corbyn is comforting himself with the result in Stoke-on-Trent Central, where his party clung on its 5,000 majority cut in half, but in the process, perhaps destroying UKIP for good. It had been seen as the party's best hope of gaining an MP in what UKIP leader Paul Nuttall called the Brexit capital of Britain. Remember, the by-elections were triggered when Labour MPs Jamie Reid and Tristram Hunt, both staunch critics of Jeremy Corbyn, quit the Commons for other jobs. In normal times, Labour should have held these seats easily. But as we've seen repeatedly in this last extraordinary year in politics, these are not normal times. Later we'll talk to Times political reporter Henry Zeffman, who is in Stoke. But first we're joined on the line by Lucy Fisher, our senior political correspondent, who is in Copeland. Lucy, I know you've been up all night covering this extraordinary result in Copeland. At what point as the votes were being counted, at what point did you get the sense that this sort of historic victory for the Conservatives was on the cards?
Well, it was actually rather late on in the evening. At first, both Labour and the Conservative representatives present at the count in Whitehaven Sports Centre were very cautious. There was a lot of expectation management, and everyone really accepted that it could be too close to call, or at any rate, it was uncertain how close it would be. But around about an hour before the result was announced, suddenly smiles began to break across the face of the Tories there, and the Labour people began to look a little more crumpled.
Now, I'm told that Theresa May was woken in the night by a text message telling her what had happened, and then she then woke up Philip, her husband, to tell him, because how else do you celebrate in the middle of the night? This is huge for Theresa May, isn't it? She's managed to do something which governments just don't do. Governments don't win by-elections against opposition parties.
Absolutely. I mean, looking backwards, the last time the government party won a seat in a by-election from the main opposition was 1982. So it really is a very rare occurrence because people usually like to bash the government when they're in power. And it should be fairly easy or comfortable at any rate for the official opposition to win. I think looking forward, it's interesting to think what this means for 2020. I think there will be a lot of people today on the Conservative side pretty pleased with themselves and thinking that this is possibly a harbinger for a landslide at the next general election.
And to what extent was this a sort of, do you think, a positive, if it wasn't obviously about bashing the government, a positive sort of thumbs up for the government? And to what extent was it bashing the Labour Party?
I think it's quite difficult to extrapolate beyond the local campaign, which was quite interesting, a bipartite campaign. I mean, the Conservatives really campaigned very heavily on the nuclear power industry, which is a major employer in the seat. Sellafield, the nuclear processing plant, employs around about 10,000 people. And they really hammered home Jeremy Corbyn's lukewarm attitude, his past remarks in opposition to nuclear power, calling for nuclear power stations to be decommissioned some years ago. So they were effective in really kind of hammering Jeremy Corbyn and that line about nuclear power. What's really quite worrying for Labour people is the fact that they campaigned on the NHS. And actually here, the local hospital is faced with cuts. There's moves afoot to move the maternity unit 40 miles away. But even given the credible threats to the local health service and the strong attack campaign that Labour won, they didn't manage to clinch it. And I think that given they rely on their sort of trust, the public's trust reposed in them on the NHS, that should be quite worrying what that means for the party nationwide.
And this morning, in reaction to it, John Woodcock, who's the Labour MP in a neighbouring constituent, Barrow in Furness, he said the result is disastrous. We shouldn't insult people's intelligence by suggesting it's anything other than that. And yet John McDonnell, the Shadow Chancellor, is saying this is not in any way a comment on Jeremy Corbyn's leadership, and inevitably blaming Tony Blair and Peter Mandelson for criticism of Corbyn's leadership in recent days. Where do you think... Who's more right in that, do you think? Is it? I mean, it really is disastrous, isn't it, for the Labour Party to have lost this seat?
I think it's a pretty severe blow for Labour, absolutely, because of the historic nature and how rare it is for a seat like this to change hands to the government, as we've outlined. But it's interesting. I think what we'll see now is this parallel reality going forward. Jeremy Corbyn's critics will be very much, you know, playing up the fact that they believe it's a complete disaster. But meanwhile, Jeremy Corbyn's allies will be saying, well, you know, it's a mixed bag, isn't it? We lost one, we won one. You know, wasn't the best night, wasn't the worst night. And I think in a way he's been lucky that there was another by-election, Stoke-on-Trent Central, the same night, which Labour managed to hold. John McDonnell's line, I think, is what we're going to see more of as well going forward. Jeremy Corbyn seeking to break more with the past, blame a political establishment, a broken political consensus he talked about in a statement he released last night, that I think absolutely includes Blair and the last Labour government as much as it does the kind of the Conservative Party. And yeah, I think that already John McDonald and other allies are looking for excuses and to blame the coup plotters and the rebels within the party.
It's interesting. Daniel Finkelstein's written an interesting piece for online at times.co.uk, where he says actually he thinks Stoke is also a disaster because it will make Labour people think, or certainly Corbyn supporters, it gives them an excuse to think that Copeland wasn't a disaster. That actually, the fact that, you know, well, we won one, we lost one, actually is not all bad. Actually, it's even worse than that, because they're instead of waking up to the potential disaster of losing two, they're actually going to continue being in this denial about what's sort of fundamentally wrong with the party.
I think that's right, because when you step back and look at these two seats, both were in traditional Labour heartlands. Both were seats where Labour had majority of several thousand votes. And there shouldn't really have ever been any question of them doing anything other than comfortably holding them. I think you say what you say is right, that this will be in many ways it will allow Jeremy Corbyn's allies or supporters to believe that he's doing okay, or at least promote that line. And I think that also leads on to sort of another quite worrying sort of aspect of all this, which is that privately, some of Jeremy Corbyn's critics were hoping that the party would lose both. And that really is a worrying worrying scenario when you get people wanting their party, their own side, to do badly in order to hasten the demise of a leader they dislike. That really shows the malaise gripping Labour, to my mind.
Well, Lucy, thank you very much for that. I'll let you get off and get some sleep. I imagine we'll be discussing the repercussions of the result in Copeland over the coming weeks. Now joined on the line by Henry Zeffman, who was at the count in Stoke-on-Trent Central, where Gareth Snell hung on to that seat with a majority of 2,500, beating the UKIP candidate, UKIP leader, Paul Nuttall. Henry, just talk us through what was the mood like in that, where the count was happening, and when did it become apparent that Labour were going to hang on to this seat?
Well, I arrived at the count not long after polls closed last night, and it was already apparent that Labour was pretty bullish about their chances of holding the seat and holding off the UKIP charge. UKIP, for that matter, were optimistic early on in the night, but you know, it took Paul Nuttall much longer to arrive at the count than any of the other candidates. And when he did arrive, he had that kind of doomed grin that candidates have when they know they're about to lose something but have to bear their way through it. When he arrived, he said, if I haven't won, it just means I haven't got enough votes, which was a line that the UKIP chairman, Paul Oakden, sort of repeated this morning, which only goes so far. I mean, the truth was that this was quite a humiliating and bruising campaign for the new UKIP leader. When Nuttall became UKIP leader by acclamation in November, he said that his ambition was not insignificant, it was to replace the Labour Party. Well, you know, he decided to stand for himself in a heartland Labour seat that backed Brexit as a sign that UKIP could replace Labour as the patriotic party in swathes of its heartlands in the Midlands and North. And they did really quite badly, only very barely increased its share of the vote, still quite some distance behind Labour, and crucially, only a very small distance in front of the Tories. So the question here is not how did UKIP lose Stoke Central, but much broader, you know, can UKIP actually capitalise on Brexit?
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
And turn it into more representation at Westminster. Last night suggests that they really might not be able to.
And I wrote for the Red Box email today, and it's online at thetimes.co.uk. I actually think this is terminal for UKIP. In these circumstances, in a seat neglected by the Labour Party for a long time, where the former MP Tristram Hunt had been parachuted in as a mate of Peter Mandelson to start with, he quit to go and work for a museum in London. The seat voted overwhelmingly for Leave. Labour then selected a candidate who described Brexit as a pile of shit. And they put up Paul Nuttall, the party leader, who was supposed to be the sort of straight-talking scouser who didn't have the maybe nastier edge that some saw in Farage. Instead, he's had this campaign completely dogged by his estranged relationship with the truth, you know, whether it's playing football with Tranmere Rovers or having friends who may have or may not have died at Hillsborough. It's sort of extraordinary. And if they couldn't win there, you sort of have to ask, what is the point of UKIP? Because it seems to me that people have either stuck with Labour because that's what they do and Labour have managed to get their votes out, or, as we've seen in Copeland, actually what's happened is that Labour voters haven't switched to UKIP as a sort of protest. They've leapfrogged to the Conservatives, a move previously, you know, we'd have thought was impossible. But if people, you know, there doesn't seem to be a path where people go to Labour, from Labour to the UKIP and then maybe the Conservatives later. They've just gone straight to the Conservatives and there doesn't seem to be a point to voting UKIP.
It's now clear, if it wasn't then, quite what an enormous risk it was for Paul Nuttall to choose to stand in this by-election himself so early in his leadership. He did have this kind of reputation. He was Farage's deputy leader, and he had this reputation, as you say, as not quite having the nasty edge of Farage, of being a little bit more cerebral and a little bit more attractive. And certainly, you know, Farage is a southern, privately educated stockbroker. Nuttall is much, you know, straight-talking Liverpudlian. We were told much better suited to UKIP's sort of reorientation towards the north. Well, actually, his campaign was abysmal. It was totally bogged down by unforced errors. You know, some of which you mentioned. I mean, very early in the campaign, Michael Crick, by taking a photo through his letterbox, noticed that Nuttall had claimed on his nomination papers that he was living at a house in Stoke that he'd never been in before. As you say, he was forced to deny that he had lied about being present at the Hillsborough Stadium disaster, but did admit losing the claim on his website that he'd lost close friends in the incident was untrue. But actually, Hillsborough, I mean, I was in Stoke the other day talking to voters here, and you know, obviously the Hillsborough thing had cut through, and lots of voters were, you know, it didn't reflect well on him at all. But it mostly served to remind them that he was not local. Now, after Tristram Hunt, you know, was parachuted in and left after 6 years because he wasn't, you know, in a position where he could be in the cabinet. The residents, they're really sensitive to the idea that Stoke is somewhere, you know, ripe for carpet bagging. And you know, Hillsborough reminded them that he's not local, which was also, I mean, a big factor here was a radio interview he gave quite early in the campaign where he couldn't name the six towns which make up Stoke, and also he wouldn't confirm that he would continue to live in the seat after the election. So that, you know, that felt like he was using Stoke as a stepping stone on his path to Westminster. And you know, the other thing is that UKIP kept saying, oh, well, you know, Stoke can be the Brexit capital of Britain. And I think we might need to reflect after this by-election whether Brexit is quite as big a deal still in the minds of voters as it is in the minds of the media in Westminster, which sounds like a slightly dangerous thing for someone like me who writes a weekly Brexit email for the Times to say. But, you know, from voters I spoke to, and I think the results sort of bear this out, you know, it is important and they made their feelings known last June, but they feel like they made their feelings known last June and that was a separate matter, and they have all sorts of other concerns in their lives. And you know, a UKIP candidate comes here and says, I want to make you the Brexit capital of Britain. They said, well, no, we don't really want that very much. We have concerns about the NHS and about schools and about social care, and we want to send someone to Westminster who reflects that, not just our views on Brexit. I mean, and as you say, if Stoke voters really were that adamantly keen to avoid Brexit backsliding, then they wouldn't have elected Gareth Snell, whose fruity views on Brexit are well known.
I think there's also this sense that the main voters are far more motivated and concerned about Brexit than Brexit voters. I mean, if you were a Leave voter in Stoke-on-Trent Central, by and large, you might look at the current government, and actually Theresa May, the main criticism of Theresa May is that she's pursuing a too hard a Brexit or too fast. There's not an overwhelming sense that she's not delivering on what people in Stoke-on-Trent Central or even the rest of the country demanded. So the motivation to go out and vote to send a message to Theresa May isn't there in the way there was maybe in Richmond, where Lib Dem voters did turn out, or people, Remain voters turn out and voted for the Lib Dems to send a message they weren't happy about Brexit. If you're a Brexiteer, you're probably quite satisfied with how the government's going. It's the Remain voters who the Lib Dems are hoping to pick up, and actually the Lib Dems, you know, managed to push UKIP into fourth in Copeland.
Well, no, there's that, and in fact, I think you know, we spoke so much since the referendum about Labour and UKIP and the relationship between their voters and what each party's strategy means for the other party's strategy. But we've kind of ignored the interplay between the Tories and UKIP. And actually, Theresa May, despite voting Remain, has been so forthright in her desire to deliver Brexit that has closed off quite a key path for UKIP. You know, UKIP said here in Stoke, oh, we are the party that will stop Brexit backsliding. But I think it's very hard for a voter to look at the government and say, oh, they're backsliding on Brexit. I mean, which was borne out, by the way, in the Tory result here, which was very good. You know, obviously the Tory result in Copeland was staggeringly good. But in Stoke, you know, the government increased its share of the vote, albeit very slightly. But that's a very rare thing for the government to do. I think it's only the sixth by-election since 1970 where the government has increased its share of the vote. I mean, that's quite impressive given they had a 25-year-old candidate who liked Theresa May had also backed Remain. They didn't have much infrastructure here and they totally focused on Copeland. So I think, you know, another thing we need to think about here is blimey, the strength of the Tory party in holding together a coalition of, you know, its Remain voters, but also reassuring Leave voters, whether they've voted Conservative before or not, that they are the party that is delivering on the mandate they were given on June the 23rd to take Britain out of the European Union.
Just finally, before I let you go and get some sleep, what's your sense? Do you think we'll look back on these results and they will feel in a few months or a year or so as significant as they do now? Or is there a danger that everyone gets a bit overexcited in the heat of it all? And actually, you know, the next time a by-election comes along, there'll be a different result and it'll all even itself. How significant, putting the two together, how significant do you think they are?
Look, I don't know if anyone will be telling stories of the Stoke by-election in years to come other than me, but I do think it's a clear bellwether, a harbinger of what's to come. I'd be very surprised. I mean, Paul Nuttall, as he was leaving yesterday, and to be fair to him, albeit slightly under duress, he did answer quite a lot of questions from journalists on his way out of the count. And he said, you know, there will be loads more by-elections in the near future, by-elections that are more fertile for UKIP and where we will do better. Well, it's kind of hard to see how that happens. You know, the Labour Party is, I mean, in fact, you know, it's important to look it out. This isn't even that good a result for the Labour Party. You know, its majority has declined by 4%. Like every other by-election since the referendum, it's lost a share of the vote. But even in those circumstances, even with Jeremy Corbyn as their leader, the loyalty is strong enough to see off UKIP in a seat where the overwhelming majority of its voters back Leave. Well, you know, it's very hard to see in that context what could get so much worse for the Labour Party that UKIP is able to do what it purports to be able to do, which is to sweep Labour territory, sweep Labour heartlands. So I think this is, you know, this will maybe not be a famous by-election, but it will be a very good indicator of how politics will play out over the next few years.
Henry Zeffman there in Stoke-on-Trent Central. My thanks also to Lucy Fisher for joining us from Copeland. There's loads of news and analysis all about what the by-election results might mean. You can find that at thetimes.co.uk, where you can also sign up for my morning email briefing, thetimes.co.uk/redbox, where my daily analysis of what's happening in politics will land in your inbox every morning at just after 8 o'clock. Do subscribe to the podcast too, where if you leave a review on iTunes, we might even dedicate a future episode to you. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, it's goodbye.
Thank you for downloading. To discover more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.